Today's episode is brought to you by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, go to salesschema.com/takecharge.
There's definitely, as in pretty much all industries, a changing of the guard. There's a pretty distinct shift in how people perceive brand happening at large across industries and sectors. And it's age related, and it's the way people consume information, right? They look at things much differently. What brands mean to them is much different than what brands mean to older generations. The playing field has been very leveled by technology. And you know, when you jump onto a website or you pick up an app or you look at something, you really don't know if that company's got 3 employees or they've got 30,000 employees, right? Like, it's a very level playing field. And we see that across the board. There's a lot of opportunities for smaller organizations to really make an impact with the right brand and with the right story.
Welcome to the Digital Agency Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Englander. My new book, Relationship Sales at Scale, is now live on Amazon Kindle, on paperback, as well as hardcover. So to tell you about the book and give you a little context, in a world of noise, competition, and skepticism, you've probably found that spamming your prospects with undifferentiated pitches, case studies, and sales collateral is a lot like yelling at a brick wall. And on the other hand, trying to go old school and completely personalize every touch point 100% is unrealistic and unsustainable because the few people you manage to contact might not even notice or care. And when life gets busy, your sales activity and your team's activity tends to grind to a halt. Your pipeline runs dry and stagnation, feast and famine, all these bad things, they can all happen. So what if the answer is actually combining the new school with the old? And instead of going in cold, how much faster could you grow if you could identify and open doors with the prospects who live within your circles of influence and are already primed to trust and do business with you? So this book, Relationship Sales at Scale, is the new selling philosophy for our age. Bold statement, right? But it is, because it marries the timeless power of tribe-based trust with digitally enabled scale so you can open doors tastefully and convert prospects consistently, all without spamming anyone. So it's written by me, Dan Englander. I'm the CEO and founder of this company, Sales Schema, and the book's stories, strategies, and hands-on resources are grounded in thousands of outreach campaigns conducted for clients since 2014. That's among almost 90 clients to secure opportunities between our clients and hard-to-reach prospects, including the leaders of the largest companies on earth. A few things you're going to learn. You're going to learn how to balance personalization and scale to keep your pipeline full and achieve reliable and predictable growth. You're going to learn how to condense 5 years of networking into a single week-long campaign so you can batch up warm referrals into specific ideal accounts. You're going to learn how to de-risk conversations. That's the emphasis for this, with highly skeptical prospects by leveraging strong personal commonalities instead of boring publicly available information like, hey, I saw you tweeted about this thing last week. That doesn't work. And you're going to be able to leverage dozens of actual copy examples, campaign strategies, and online resources so you can launch and close deals in a matter of weeks. So Relationship Sales to Scale will reshape the way you think about sales and business development, whether you are an owner, a dedicated salesperson, or in any growth-focused role. This book is a fit for the owners and salespeople in professional service companies and other B2B service and or software areas, assuming you're going after high lifetime value. So this is not for small and medium-sized businesses. So with that said, if you would like to learn more and pick up the book on Kindle or paperback or hardcover, and eventually we'll have it out in audio before too long, you can do that by going to salesschema.com/RSAS. Again, that's salesschema.com/RSAS. So today on the show, I'm very excited to welcome Phil McMillan, who is the Managing Director of CS Brand Group, or CSBG, which is a strategic brand partner for private equity funds and their portfolio companies. So Phil's been a client of ours for some time, and he's doing very compelling work at CSBG. And this interview was really great because he really opened up about his 15-year journey building the agency, starting from an entrepreneurial family, going through lots of changes and basically honing the organization in, developing its identity, and really specializing over the course of time. I really enjoyed talking to Phil because he talked about what it's like building an organization based on the people
developing, you know, a vision that you can sort of allow really great people to execute. We talked about what it was like to sort of hone in on one or two key services and how the organization has had enough discipline to turn away business and to kind of stay the course and why that's really worth it. We also talked a lot about sales and new business and what it's like to sort of balance the idiosyncrasies of a weird niche, and we all have weird niches, with the sort of thing that is timeless and works for everyone, and basically getting ideas from other places to see what works. So I think you're going to learn a whole lot from this perspective, and without further ado, please give it up for Phil McMillan.
Phil, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
Yeah, for sure. So we've been working together for a little while now, and you've a pretty incredible business journey from what it sounds like and from what I know. For those that don't know you, would you mind talking a little bit about your background and kind of what it took to build CS Brand Group over 15 years, which is a ginormous question that we'll answer beyond that, but from a high level?
Yeah, you know, it starts actually, I come from a family of entrepreneurs. My grandfather was very entrepreneurial. And so I always had that in my blood and always knew I wanted to build something and was fortunate enough to be part of one of his businesses that he had built. And in that, I learned a lot, not just the jobs that I had. He always treated me, as he should, like an employee. So I had to work in different departments within the organization. And I learned the value of hard work first and foremost, and learned about working in different environments with different people, but also learned a little bit more about what it meant to run a business, right? And so as I fast forwarded through my career, I kind of had started several businesses and worked in a lot of other small businesses, kind of learning what I enjoyed and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to spend my time. And the thing I always enjoyed the most was really getting out there on the commercial side of the business and left the operational and the production or the work, the actual work itself. So I knew that, and as I grew up and went through that process, I was able to kind of learn also the value of building an identity of a business, right? Like, what does the business stand for? And it's a lot more than just the name on the door. And that was kind of one of those critical lessons that I learned. And as I took other roles on and did different things, I realized that a lot of businesses really didn't get that. They didn't understand the identity of a business and what it did and how it actually contributed in so many different ways within the business. One of the things that about the family business that I grew up in is the DNA was evident in the products, in the people, and how they approached things, and how the people were treated, and how the executive meetings went. All those things, it was really part of much more than just the name on the door. So, you know, as I found myself in the mid-2000s in a place where I needed personally to do something different than what I was doing. I was working as a VP of sales and marketing in a manufacturing business. I needed to do something different. And I also wanted to do something that I enjoyed. And so with that, I started looking at, okay, where can I add value? Where can I spend my time that's going to really be something that I personally enjoy, but also where I can help other organizations? And I came back to that idea of kind of an identity and how do you help companies formulate and communicate that? I had been doing a lot of that anyway with the work that I was doing in my role. So it was kind of a natural transition into starting CS Brand Group, which I did in 2007. And when we first started, we were more broadly focused outside of identity. We didn't just do that. We also did some consulting around general marketing. You know, we did a wide variety. At the time, the company was called Complete Spectrum. So we did a wide variety of marketing and technology services because that's what I was most comfortable with and where I felt that I could add value.
Yeah, that's great. And I definitely want to get into how things have evolved from Complete Spectrum till now. To do a little sidebar, it's funny because talking about your backgrounds, you know, in an entrepreneurial family, I never really had that. All I ever had was this kind of fear of just being stuck in a monotonous job all day, you know, coming out of college. And I didn't know what the alternative was, but I basically had the experience of working in an ad agency and then in sort of a hybrid role with basically a startup kind of creative services shop. And then from there, I was able to kind of stair step into starting a business. And I think that if I hadn't had those post-college experiences, I wouldn't have been able to start this company. And there are these very like bright and shining examples of like the natural born entrepreneurial whiz kid that comes out of college and then takes over the world, like the Zuckerberg story or whatever. But yeah. I've found that to be pretty exceptional. And most people I know that haven't had that, at least a few formative experiences, tend to struggle more, I think, in entrepreneurship. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that. Like, did you always know that you wanted to start your own company based on your background and your family, or was it something that evolved, you know, over time?
You know, I think it's tough. You know, I'm getting to the age now where I start to start to look behind, and you kind of analyze, like, how did I end up here? What did I do? What decisions did I make? And, you know, I remember being a young person. My dad worked at IBM. And so he brought home a computer when I was really young. I had a PC Junior, and I always had a love for computers and those things. And so a lot of my formative years, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years old, were based around electronics and computing and things like that. And I had a lot of business ideas, even at those ages, right? And so I think to answer your question, I think I always had that seed in me. Like, I wanted to write my own accounting software. I remember I had a whole business plan put together and all those things. And of course, none of that ever came to fruition, right? There, you know, I definitely did some software projects and other things that on a very, very small scale for the fun of it more than anything else. But I took that and actually, you know, as I mentioned, like IT and technology became a real passion of mine. And I didn't have a desire to do that for somebody else. I wanted to go help people, but I wanted to do it on my terms. And so I think it is interesting. One of the first questions I always ask when I hire somebody is, what are your goals? And there's a place for you at our organization regardless, but do you want to start your own business, or do you see yourself working alongside other people for the rest of your career? And that doesn't impact whether or not we hire that person, but it does impact how we integrate that person into our team and how I think about engaging with them. Because it's so important for an entrepreneur, if you want to take, because there's a lot of really talented people out there that are working towards starting their own business. And you got two options. You can either say, no, I don't want to partner with a person like that because I know where it's heading. If they're good enough, they're going to leave. Or you could say, hey, I'm going to be part of that person's journey, and I'm going to take advantage of their talents and their knowledge while they're here. And also maybe give them an opportunity to learn other skills from my experience, because that was the opportunity I had growing up in an entrepreneurial family, was to learn a lot of different things. I never would have learned finance or inventory management or you know, the importance of an ERP system had I not been right there. Right now, I don't use any, well, I use finance, but I don't use any of those other things now. But that knowledge helps me interact and build relationships with people who do. So if we can offer that to our team as they grow, it doesn't matter to me. But it is a very, very different path. And you do find two very different people that are on one of those two journeys. And so for me, I think those formative years, as I look back, were definitely focused on, I want to do something for myself. I want to build something. I want to do it on my terms. I want to feel like I'm making a difference, not a part of something much larger.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's funny when you get those employees, because you kind of think of like an A player, and that an A player is somebody that is exceptional and very good in a particular role. But then I almost think, and maybe this has been said by others, but there's almost a level above that, which is that entrepreneurial employee that's doing things that you couldn't even imagine asking them to do, that is basically like a game changer. And it's sort of like holding on to like a bucking bronco. Like, you keep them as long as you can, right? Before they send you away.
And I think, you know, you have the notion, and I think some people are successful, that, you know, maybe that person is a long-term player. Maybe you create an environment for them. One of the things that, you know, you and I have talked about in the past, and I feel is really important, has been part of our journey, is to build the business around the people instead of the people around the business, right? And so I think you look at that and you figure out, if you really know your team, figure out what's going to make them successful long-term. And being entrepreneurial, there's a lot of reasons why people say they're entrepreneurial, right? It might be for freedom. It might be for financial gain. It might be for personal accomplishments and success. Everybody's version of why they want to be an entrepreneur is a little different. And if you can really get down to the heart of that, if they understand enough about themselves at that point to really get down to the heart of that, you can leverage that, and it can become a really good long-term partnership.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an interesting point, you know, the idea of building the business around the people. And I've sort of gone back and forth on that. I think I used to be resistant to it because I sort of thought like it was like I was being lazy, right? If I'm just like, well, we'll find good people, we'll sort of see where they slot into place. It was like taking the onus off of me to decide where they should sit and what they should be doing, and taking the decision making off me. Now I've sort of come back around on it again. And I think that, you know, especially reading books like Who and the idea of like finding really good people and letting them, you know, make their own path. Can you elaborate on that more? Like, what does that mean to you to build a business around the people? As a quick break, I wanted to let you know about our newest video training, How to Take Charge of Your Agency's Future Revenue. By the end of this training, you're going to learn how we get 2 to 5 qualified appointments every week using tasteful and highly targeted email outreach. That might not sound like a lot, but once you understand the outreach napkin math, you're going to learn how this can lead to massive scale for your agency or B2B service company. In addition to that, you're going to learn the 6 steps for successful outreach campaigns based on everything that we've learned from working with more than 100 agencies since 2014. You're going to get the complete agency outreach tech stack so you understand the right tools for getting the right results. And you're going to see agency to brand email examples and get inspiration from high converting campaigns. So to get this 30-minute training, all you need to do is go to salesschema.com/take charge. Again, that's salesschema.com/take charge.
Well, you know, in early stages, it meant exactly what you just said was, I don't really know what I want. I'm going to find smart people and we're going to figure it out together. If I'm completely honest, I found some really, really smart people. I've worked with some awesome and hired some great people. None of them are still here. And the reason for that is that the mistake I feel like I made at that time was every business still needs a vision and a leader, right? And just hiring a bunch of smart people together without any true direction or focus on what you're building and why is not what smart people are looking for, right? They want to attach themselves to something that they can believe and buy in. And so then I swung the other way, right? Which is, well, I'm going to architect the vision and I'm just going to create and plug people in based on my needs and how I see those as an organization. And I think that's probably the closest to a traditional agency model that we've ever gotten, where we have, hey, this is what we are. We need this role. We need this role. We need this role. And we're going to put that together and I'm going to drive the ship and everybody's going to fall in line. And that works for some people. I was not personally successful with that either. I didn't feel like that really was what I wanted to build. And so the latest evolution of that for me is, let's create a vision. Let's all buy into what we're building. I'm going to drive the path. I'm going to create the destination. And then together as a team, let's figure out how we get there most effectively for everybody, personally, professionally, and as an organization. How do we help our clients? But it's really, really important, I found in our journey, to architect that vision, to be the visionary, to understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, who we're helping, and how we're going to do that. And then allow the really smart people to shape that within the vision that you've created. And that seems to be the most impactful way. And how you get contributions from my team as we've made that change have been astronomical. Their fingerprints are on everything about our identity. So it's not just, hey, this is my vision. Now it's our vision. But I needed a starting place when I hired them, when we talked about it, when we brainstorm, when we get together on sites and things like that. I need to have that singular vision that they then can use their skills and their talents. And in that way, we are building the business around them, right? But I had to start with that direction and that plan first. And that was, I think, the mistakes I made early on.
Yeah. And I put a bookmark in there to learn more about what that vision looks like and sort of how much you're defining it or leaving it open. Before we do that, though, let's jump back in time again, right? So you're starting Complete Spectrum, or whatever it might have been called in the early 2000s, coming out of this VP of marketing and sales role. What did that look like in the early days? Like, how were you thinking about the agency back then? You know, what did the first few clients look like and so on?
Hi, my name's Philip, and I'll do anything you want, right? I think we started more strategically than that. So I always, a little bit more about CS Brand Group. We always had an intent to focus on private equity from day one. And I think the reason for that was, it was strategic in that, I had a lot of associates that were in private equity. So I understood the space probably better than most. But more importantly, I recognized that if I was going to do this, I needed an audience. And I needed something that was going to differentiate me. And the idea of going in and talking with a private equity fund, and if you're not familiar with private equity, basically those are organizations that invest the majority, they capitalize a business, they take a majority stake in the business, so they do have controlling interest, and then they grow that business and eventually sell it. And that's how they return the money back to their investors. And so because of what they do, they're buying and selling businesses all the time. And those businesses are usually have a growth trajectory. There's an investment thesis behind them to take the business from where it's at and get it to some level, multiple times more revenue, higher valuation, more margin, all those things, right? That these guys are really, really good at. That's what they do all day, every day. And as part of that, they're buying and selling businesses constantly. They usually keep a business on average from 3 to 5 years. And then they sell it and they buy more business and they keep that going. So from a customer perspective, it's ideal because if we can build relationships at a fund level, then we're able to interact with their portfolio companies, those companies that they own, and have introductions to those companies that just, it keeps feeding itself, right? So we recognize that opportunity, but how do you get there, right? Because it's also a very niche space and everybody knows everybody. And there are established relationships within the space that they tend to lean on. And also they don't necessarily see the value of brand. It's not something that they automatically go to as a value creator. So we had some challenges for sure. And so when we started out, we broadened it and we said, look, we're going to focus on all things marketing related and technology related, IT, websites, things like that, that would get our foot in the door and create opportunities. And then from there, we identified a bunch of portfolio companies that we wanted to work with. And those were tied to funds that we wanted to work with. And we started looking for those kind of opportunities within those portfolio companies. And eventually we landed a few, and that enabled us to then get introductions with the funds and grow from there. So it was about being relatively adaptable and selling ourselves on early days on relationship and just being the right partner to kind of help that get that organization to the next level. And we had a very, very wide set of services that we were willing to offer to do that. Small team, very nimble. We all had broad generalist roles prior to that. And so we were comfortable going in and kind of adding some marketing expertise to those management teams that may not have had marketing expertise there. So we were bolting on basically resources that company needed at the time, but didn't have the ability to invest in. We would be those partners and develop those assets that they needed for whatever they were trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when we've talked before, you've mentioned resetting the business 3 times, which I'm guessing was interesting and probably not always fun. But would you mind taking us through that? What each reset looked like and what informed it?
So on the heels of what we just talked about, we were able to build a successful business, really being all things to everybody, right? What do you need? We were just going to be a generalist marketing agency. And this is back late 2000s, early 2010s. And so we were able to grow pretty effectively that way, built out a team and were successful. You know, we had good margin, all those things. There was a couple of challenges, though. Number one, customer concentration. We tended to do really well with certain customers, and we would get in deep with them, and we would be doing all sorts of marketing activities for them. And other customers, we might just do one project. And the challenges we had was we were large enough where we were being called upon to do big agency type work, but we were small enough to where we weren't able to keep everybody busy all the time. And so, you know, as an example, like if we were doing press release work, well, we had somebody that could do that, but that wasn't necessarily a 40, 50 hour a week job, right? Mm-hmm. It would ebb and flow. And it would, as you can imagine, in a small business, there'd be weeks where we had too much work and other weeks where we didn't have enough in that one discipline. Now you multiply that across, you know, web development and creative and designs and trade shows and event planning and all those things. We were having a really, really hard time staffing properly to meet the needs of our clients, who, by the way, by definition of who we're partnering with, were also themselves scaling quickly and their needs were exponentially growing quarter over quarter. So we took a step back and looked at that and said, you know, okay, what is it about it? Who do we really want to be and how we're going to do this? And so we immediately recognized that we needed to drop the technology piece of it. We were doing a lot of IT consulting, integrations, and things like that. There was a lot of other firms doing that. Our marketing work was our Trojan horse on that, and it wasn't really profitable, and it was a distraction for the business. And also was much higher demand. Like when you have IT type problems, the response times and the SLAs and things like that attached to those are very, very demanding on a business. So kind of our first journey was to say, okay, we're going to double down on the marketing world. We don't need the technology piece of this anymore. We don't need the voiceover IP or the IT consulting or things like that to sustain the business. That's not a focus area for us. So we dropped that and became a true marketing partner for the companies that we were working with. And in that, we still were trying to do a lot of things. We were still trying to provide services to them that they needed across the board from a marketing perspective. The things we didn't do, we would try and establish white label partnerships, or we would maybe bring on some experts at a contractor level to try and meet those needs. And where we ended up with all of that was that we had a few really, really good clients and then a lot of small clients, right? And the disparity was good until you started to, as is the journey of these private equity held companies, they'd either get to a level where they would bring marketing internal, or the business would be sold to a strategic buyer that already had a marketing department, right? So you'd go from 60 to zero in the span of one press release, right? Where it's like, okay, this company's now been sold, which was always the goal. And it's actually a great success story, but we no longer need your services. And so the ups and downs that we were having to ride out were difficult at best. So then we said, okay, well, more importantly, as we start to look at the services that we offer, how can we start to focus more on one or two key services where we feel we can differentiate ourselves? Where are we having success? We're doing all these things today. We can't walk away from those. We want to continue to support our clients. But as we think about growth and as we go to the future, what does that look like? And then we were able to identify that brand was really a key component. It was part of our DNA. It went back to the days from what I'd recognized and working as a very young man, that identity was critical. And it was more than just the name or the logo. It was who the company was. And in working with private equity, we recognized there was oftentimes big evolutions in who the company is from the first time that they received an investment from a private equity sponsor through the end of that hold and on to the next, right? There's a major evolution happening within that company that is really shifting the identity of the business. And there's an opportunity for us to begin to be a partner that's going to focus in just on that. And so that was really our third evolution, was when we went from Complete Spectrum to CS Brand Group. And we focus purely on branding and what that means for those partner companies that we work with. Being a turnkey partner, we're not looking for the long-term relationship, the retainer agreements, things like that. We're truly a project-based partner that comes in. We have an entry point and an exit point to the engagement to help them build the brand that's going to then help them to scale the business and it can become the success story that they need it to be for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think one question that comes to mind is branding can mean, you know, so many different things. And, you know, you could definitely see a situation where they're like, well, you've come up with this brand strategy. Could you also implement these parts of it? How have you sort of corralled it and defined it the right way to your audience? And how have you sort of had the discipline to say, here's what we're going to do. Here are the things that we're not going to do, or we're going to send you to partners for, et cetera.
That's a great question. And I think that's been the hardest part is, you know, as we go through this, we have long-term relationships with clients where we've spent, you know, an enormous amount of time building out certain disciplines for them and building relationships. And I think it's hard because we love working with our clients and we do, as process of developing their brand, we get to know their business really, really well. And we also see the potential. I mean, I still get really excited learning about these businesses and where they can go. And there's a part of me that wants to be a part of that, right? Like you get kind of sucked into these stories and some of these businesses just have amazing trajectories. And so you say, well, you know, we could do this for you, or we could do that for you. And it's a trap. It really is, because then you have to have people that can do this or that, or you have to take focus away from another client's branding work to be able to support that initiative. So it's not something that happens overnight. It really started, you know, as going back to what we were talking about painting a picture of where you want to go and then allowing the team to color in the pattern. It really started with, okay, how do we present ourselves externally? So for all new business moving forward, for new introductions, for new opportunities we have, what story do we want them to hear? And we spent a lot of time crafting that story. That was part of our rebrand, part of us kind of drinking our own Kool-Aid, if you will, of how do we identify the opportunity and then go through that exercise ourselves. And when we did that, we were able then to address all of our external marketing materials, our positioning. We started with our own internal values, our mission statement, our kind of key core values as an organization. And then we took that out externally and looked at what does that mean for our engagement with the general market, right? How are we going to define ourselves? We landed on CS Brand Group as our brand, kind of showing our dedication and focus to brand. And then we looked at our service offering and we said, look, for new clients, this is what we're going to do. We're going to really be exclusively focused on brand. For our existing clients, where we've had ongoing relationships, what we've done is we've continued to support that and we continue to do that at a level that we always have, because we feel that that partnership is important and we just never know where those relationships are going to go. So for certain services that we may not offer to new clients, but we continue to offer to existing clients, we're going to continue to support those in the short term, as long as those relationships last, because those are critical to us. And especially if they're financially viable. If not, then, you know, we have conversations with those clients. And we're also very transparent about kind of where our focus is as an organization. And because of that, there's a natural evolution of their relationship with us too, right? They're starting to see as we go through and as we have conversations and as we present our decks and they hear our team talking about engagements, that we are focused on brand. And brand doesn't mean that we can't support them on those things. It just means that our approach to supporting them is a little different. As you suggested, maybe a strategic partnership makes sense where we bring someone to the table that has that core discipline, and we can still advise and make sure that the brand is, that the positioning is upheld and that it aligns with the vision for the business. But we may not do that work ourselves. And so it's really about examining who we are, what our core skill sets are, and drawing those lines internally where we sit down with our clients as we get closer to the end of the engagement, say, okay, what are your needs? What can we continue to help you with? Where can we make introductions for you and kind of set you on a path for success in other areas of the growth marketing that you're going to need?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think one thing that I picked up on for you and others, and also like our own experience, is often it's like kind of like a return to form. You know, it's like the thing that was always in front of you, but then you forgot it was there. And for us internally, you know, we've done a lot of different experiments, and we've talked about more hands-on sales or new business trainings. We talked about, you know, all sorts of different things, but we keep kind of going back to, hey, we're really good at opening doors with people. And that was like the first thing that I ever did with the company when I made Udemy courses in 2015, you know, and it's kind of just like, well, it's that, but better and more informed now and that sort of thing. So I'd love to talk a little bit about that. Like what was that experience like for you to develop that focus on brand? Was this an offsite that you had? Did it culminate in a Word doc? Like how did it come about and how long did it take?
I think we probably pretended to be focused on brand before we really were. And I say that because I think, hey, kind of taking a step back, I think, you know, some of the aha moments for me now that I didn't have before. Now, when we talk about maybe different client engagements and maybe there's a client that's pushing us in a direction that is not aligned with the direction that we're heading, now I see my team speak up and be like, well, how are we going to service that? Or that's not really part of where we do. Maybe we should make an introduction, or maybe we should handle it this way. And looking back, I've never had that before. And so that helps me kind of analyze your question and think about, okay, well, what's changed, right? And I think at its core, what it was is really putting your money where our mouth was. I think we said it for a long time, but then, you know, hey, there's opportunity for planning an event came up. Can you help with that? Sure. Why not? You know, it's revenue. We can do it. We have the skill set. We can do it. Or, you know, hey, this client's looking for an SEO engagement. And, you know, yeah, we could do that. You know, and those aren't aligned with who we were telling people we were, but we were opportunistic, as most small businesses are, right? You see the revenue, you see the dollars, and you also know that you have the capabilities and the staff to do it. So you say, why not? The big aha moment for us was the first time that we turned those opportunities down, right? And we said, look, you know, that's not who we are. That's not what we're going to be. We're doubling down on this and we're building internal processes. That's something we've really, really, that we've been able to focus on as part of our specialization, is building processes that are scalable, and that we don't have processes for those things. We don't have a way to get to an estimate of margin on those things. We don't have a way, like we're kind of running things completely willy-nilly on those areas compared to how tight we're running our brand processes. Well, maybe we don't take that work. And the first time that I still remember the first time I didn't, it was kind of that stomach clenching moment where it was a big opportunity for us that we turned down because we just weren't the right partner for it. And we knew it. And there was a whole bunch of reasons why it was the right decision, but it didn't make it any easier. And, you know, you always worry as a small business owner about, well, what if we need that revenue? What if the sky falls tomorrow and you don't have access to that opportunity and you're kicking yourself for not taking it when you had the chance? But it means it's a shift in really thinking and believing that what we're doing is the right thing and that this is going to drive the most success for us long term, and passing over those little opportunities that will distract you from the bigger goal. So I think, to answer your question, I think we talked about it a lot, but it really where it started to change as a culture internally was when we stopped accepting those opportunities. And we really said, okay, this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. No, we don't do that. Does that mean we don't get that work or that opportunity? So be it. There's plenty of opportunities out there for us.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good mindset. And it's kind of like, it's like an optimism, but it's like a sober optimism, sort of like there's going to be another train coming down the tracks. Maybe it's 5 minutes from now, maybe it's 10, but there'll be another one, then we can get on it. Right. So I really like that. To do a little, let's do a little sidebar on sales. And I think that one thing that lots of gurus, perhaps like me, will talk about is, hey, go do things this way and it'll work. And I think the one thing that's taken for granted is like how idiosyncratic and weird different markets are. Can you talk about that a little bit? We've talked in the past about private equity. You've been selling into this market for 15 years, so you probably know something about them. What makes them interesting as a niche or different? What have you learned from selling into that market that might be different than other areas? And hopefully that'll be useful to everybody that's selling into other weird niches.
Yeah. You know, I think, so a couple of things. There's a saying that says it's lonely at the top, right? And I think that one of the challenges that I've had, and you talked about gurus and consultants and other people that have found ways to success, but those don't always translate to our business and our niche. And I think everybody feels that way about their niche. It's like, well, you know, you had a lot of success in X and Y, but I'm in Z and it's different and it doesn't always translate directly. And one of the challenges with our space is just getting meetings, right? And it's so much easier now, but starting out, man, it was tough because they don't take meetings. They just don't. Like there's no new opportunity creation that you can really get. You have to talk about the success you've already had in this space, and you have to be able to show relevant work. And the best introductions you're going to get are from somebody who's already worked with you in this space. Like that's the way to open doors. And so it is a different space, and it's affected. There's no playbook for it, right? Per se. Like it's, you know, like what's your sales cycle? Well, you got to figure that out empirically. Like no one's going to be able to tell you how long it's going to take from the time you make an introduction to the time you're going to transact with a fund or its portfolio company. So I think it's what it's created for me personally is the need to absorb as much information and education, but also to be savvy enough to understand that not all things are going to work in this space. And so how do I apply those to what I already know about the audience, about their preferences? And be willing to be wrong. You still have to be willing to try things. I've been surprised at how many times I've said, well, that'll never work. And lo and behold, it works, right? So it doesn't mean that I, even after 15 years, I have all the answers. But I think I have to continue learning. I've got to continue growing. And I've got to continue to take advice and listen to what's making other organizations successful. I mean, honestly, that's why we focused on specialization, because we saw that in so many other areas. And then we saw that trend in private equity as well, as far as vendors and suppliers having to become more specialized. Well, I learned a lot about how to do that from people that aren't in private equity support, right? And a lot of those learnings and that experience and those playbooks were able to be applied to our niche, but some pieces of it were not. And, you know, that's the key, is being able to distinguish and be willing to trial and error what's working, what's not, what adjustments do we need to make, and accepting that, kind of going back to our conversation before, accepting that because it's my vision, that a lot of that falls on my plate, that I need to figure that out. And I've got to be the one to lead the conversation, accept the failures, you know, and celebrate the successes with the team, but not assume that someone else is going to step up and do it. That falls on me to continue to drive that growth for our organization and figure out what makes us unique and how we communicate to our target market.
Yeah, I really like what you had to say there, because I think it is sort of a thing you have to balance between the things that make your niche weird with also the things from far off field that could really work. And for me personally, what I found is that oftentimes it's looking at consumer sales and consumer marketing, because they're not overthinking it. And what happens in the B2B world, we get so far up our, you know what, like overcomplicating everything, that it's really nice to have something that's straightforward and emotional as a pitch and so on. And I get a lot of inspiration from friends of mine that run consumer focused businesses. So I think that's really great. And one thing that you mentioned in the past I thought was interesting is the sort of, and this is happening everywhere, I'm sure, but maybe more so in private equity, is like the generational shift with people, the older prospects versus the newer ones. Can you talk about that a little bit and your process there?
So there's definitely, as in pretty much all industries, a changing of the guard. There's a pretty distinct shift in how people perceive brand happening at large across industries and sectors. And it's age related, and it's the way people consume information, right? They look at things much differently. What brands mean to them is much different than what brands mean to older generations. The playing field has been very leveled by technology. And you know, when you jump onto a website or you pick up an app or you look at something, you really don't know if that company's got 3 employees or they've got 30,000 employees, right? Like it's a very level playing field. And we see that across the board. There's a lot of opportunities for smaller organizations to really make an impact with the right brand and with the right story. And historically, in private equity, as we talked about earlier, brand has not been top of mind. There's a lot of operational efficiencies that can be gained. There's a lot of playbooks that are utilized by different funds and how they handle their investments. And very rarely has brand been at the top of that list, right? It's a factor, and there's certain triggers for when they might go through a branding exercise. But as generations have trended younger, maybe as I get older, whichever way you want to look at it, we start to see more opportunities created by people's understanding of brand and the impact that that can have, even in a B2B world, right? And how they consume information is much different as well. So they're much more savvy to good branding versus inferior branding. They understand brand as a whole, as the identity of the business, and not just a name and a logo. And because of that, it's creating more opportunities for us, because we're no longer having to educate those individuals on why branding matters. We're kind of getting, the hump has already been crossed over for those that understand brand, because a lot of our time is spent educating the market on brand, right? Why our mission is to prove the value that brand brings to an organization. And we do less proving, convincing is probably a better word, and more proving now, because we don't have to convince them. They see the value of brand. They see the challenges that their investments are having from a branding perspective, and why it's so important to get ahead of that. And that's just, I think it's just that as they've consumed more information, as they've grown up with more dynamic brands. I mean, compare Coca-Cola's history to Facebook's history from a branding perspective, right? Very different. Most common people, if you ask them on the street, couldn't name one executive of Coca-Cola, right? The brand is separate from the people. Facebook, everybody knows Zuckerberg and what it represents. And Apple, everybody knew Steve Jobs. And so those brands are becoming more of an identity than they were in the past. They stand for more than just a product. They stand for a belief system. They stand for a set of values. And so those people, the younger generations, understand that. And they see how brand kind of transcends every piece of the business, from operational to culture to HR to products and services to your commercial team and all those things. And they're more likely to see the need to take that to their investment and optimize that. And so from our perspective, the shift in the generations means we approach it a little differently, because we don't feel like we have to talk about as much about why brand matters, but more about why we're the right partner to help them go through that evolution.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure we could do a whole episode on all the different facets of that, from, you know, employee recruitment to consumers to everything else. And that makes sense. Kind of getting towards the end of our time, Phil, I think, you know, one thing that we touched on earlier is the vision for the agency. And would you be willing to share that and just kind of what that looks like and how specific that is to your employees versus how much leeway they have just to kind of run with things?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd like to think that every employee could recite our mission about proving the power of brand and creating value through our engagements. I think more important than our mission, though, is, and I think this is overused, I'll be the first to say it, but I think values are critical, right? And going back to kind of finding the right people and attracting the right team for the vision that you have comes down to values. I mean, a big shift that we've had is COVID has changed the way that we do business and the way that we engage with our employees, right? And we're not certainly the only organization going through that evolution, but our values have become more important than ever, because everyone values different things. There are people that need hybrid or want to go back to the office. And our values are more focused on flexibility. And we've got people across the country that are now part of our team. And we only get together 2-3 times a year, a lot of times face-to-face, right? So how we engage with each other in our culture is as important as our mission, in my opinion. And I think our mission is easy enough to understand. The reality of it is it does take some time. Because of our focus on private equity, most of the people we're hiring don't have significant experience in private equity. They have to learn that through our organization. And you know, we've been doing this for 15 years. We can get them up to speed really quickly. And we're very fortunate to have a lot of CEOs that we've worked with in the past. And we've built relationships that are part of kind of our advisory team. And they talk with the team and bring them up to speed on things. We can teach them that part of it. The part we can't teach is the values, right? Like, are they aligned with us from a value perspective? We've got 5 key values, all about the journey: act with integrity, stay curious, collaborate strategically, and focus on value. And those mean a lot to our team. And every single person embodies those values, right? And if they don't, they're not going to last, because if they need something different than what we can provide, then it's not going to be a good long-term fit. I would absolutely love for every single one of our team, and I've never been able to say this, and I can say this with full certainty right now, every member of our team to finish their careers with CS Brand Group, because they align with our values and they see where we're heading. They want to be a part of it. They help build those values. They help build that mission. They help build that. And so if we can continue that feeling, I'm a realist. I know that's not possible. I'd love for it to happen. But the reality of it is, if I can continue to build a team around those values, the mission is tied to those values in some ways, but the mission is more of a learned exercise. To me, what's most important is that they're just the right kind of people to work with.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And even if you don't achieve it, it sounds like a meaningful thing to aim for that will get you very far towards that thing. So real quick, one thing you said that was interesting is the advisory team that you've built. Can you talk a little bit about that and the function it serves?
Yeah, I'd love to say it's formal. It's not. But, you know, we have, so we had, as an example, we had an onsite here in Tampa a few months back, and we brought in a CEO who he's been CEO for four different companies that we've rebranded or helped with the branding. I shouldn't say rebranded. We did various brand exercises with them. So he knows the value that brand can bring. And sometimes hearing it from people that have gone through it and even financially benefited from the work that we've done can be really impactful. And it's like most niche industries, you know, it's a small world. Like everybody knows everybody, and the relationships that you build are for a lifetime. A lot of the people that have worked with me have gone on to do other work in private equity because of the relationships that they've built. And that's a really cool thing. So we try and keep those relationships up, try and be really transparent about the, you know, my primary focus these days is on business development and building and maintaining those relationships. And it's very easy for me to kind of silo that and say, well, that's my world. You guys do your thing. I'll do mine. But one of my big objectives is to kind of break down those walls and allow everybody to kind of be part of those conversations and to hear from the source. And we've got an initiative this year where we have different employees on business development calls just so they can hear the conversation and get to know the people and kind of break down those walls between business development and engagement. And so I think everyone really seems to appreciate that. And included in that, like I said, is kind of an informal advisory council where we have multiple CEOs that we worked with, in many cases, multiple times, that we'll bring in for different training sessions or to weigh in on our own business development and marketing activities for our brand. And they interact with the team directly. We're going to keep doing that. That's been a really, really big step forward for us in getting people comfortable with the space, our team comfortable with the space that we're in and being more effective in their roles.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that can go a long way, and especially just in terms of getting people to understand a weirder niche much faster. Yeah. All niches are weird for that matter. So, Phil, this has been great. Really appreciate you sharing, you know, so much about your journey. Where can people go to follow what you're up to and get in touch and all that good stuff?
Well, you can always, you know, easy place to start is LinkedIn. Philip McMillan, of course, on there. Our website is csbg.co, which tells you a little bit more about what we do. And of course, you know, I'm always down for a quick phone call or a cup of coffee here in Tampa. So, you know, if anybody can track me down, look me up, face to face is the way to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Phil, let's definitely do this again and really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Again, today's episode is sponsored by our company, Sales Schema. Sales Schema helps agencies and B2B service companies build a reliable business development system through tasteful and targeted outreach. To learn more about us and check out our latest video training, again, you can go to salesschema.com/takecharge. Again, that's salesschema.com/takecharge.